G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca. G'day, Chris.
G'day, Macca. How you going, bud?
Good. What are you up to? Where are you?
South of Coffs Harbour, heading north. Beautiful day up here, a bit of cloud around, but we sort of do show parade, so we bumped out good things last night out of Sydney. We did Melbourne, Sydney, we do Brisbane today, so we've got to be in Brisbane by about 10 o'clock to bump the show in, and then I think it's that new, crew rock music. I don't understand it, but I just go to all these things and bump them in, bump them out, and obviously get paid to do it. So.
Exactly. Is it Lady Gaga?
No. Lady Gaga comes out of Melbourne last night, so I've got friends on that. There's about, 40 trucks, maybe 45 trucks will come out of there last night out of Marvel Stadium, and they'll have to be in Brisbane by about 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. So two up drivers.
Did you say 40 trucks worth of gear?
Yes.
God help me. For Lady Gaga. Oh.
Well, Taylor Swift, I think, had like 90 trucks on it when Taylor Swift came over.
Wow.
We've good things that, I don't know, there was 10 bands or 20 bands or something in there, and we've got I think maybe 20 trucks on that, 18 trucks on that or something. So.
Well, there you go. It's an interesting world. Chris, and what about the, you see any fires on your journey up the highway, down the highway?
All the dealer was closed earlier, but you get on live trapping in New South Wales, and you can ring them up, and they'll give you a road report, but it was single lane either way. A lot of smoke, just slow down, take it easy. But now there's daylight, you'll be able to see it. The fire trucks were there sort of like mopping up, but there has been a bit of rain, just drizzle, on the way up, so that will help, calm down a bit. But, still very dry. We've had a lot of rain, so there's a lot of vegetation. Won't take much with hot days. I think in Sydney yesterday it was 40 degrees or something, 45, 40.
Yeah, 40, about 40, yeah.
Yeah, so with that sort of weather, high humidity or low humidity, whatever it is, it's not going to take much for a fire to start. Sort of thing.
Exactly. Good on you, Chris. Great to talk to you, mate.
Go, Mac. Have a good day.
See ya. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca.
G'day.
That's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
Yeah, good. What's happening, mate? What do you want to tell me about?
I'm on my way to work. It's about where I am. It's about 6 degrees in. I live in Romsey, in Victoria. And just on my way to work on a Sunday morning.
What do you do, mate?
I work on the Port of Melbourne on the tugboats in Melbourne.
Oh, wow. Now, tell me, is it busier at Christmas? Is everybody trying to get stuff to come in to sell for Christmas? Is that what happens or no?
Yeah. It's pretty busy. It's the day before, we did 8 jobs into the Port of Melbourne in an hour of shifts. And, it gets pretty busy.
You're the busiest port in Australia, really, aren't you? Melbourne, biggest?
Yeah. I met you, over 20 years ago now. You come down to Melbourne to do a concert, and we took you out on one of the tugboats.
Oh, right. Wow, I remember that. I sort of remember that. We were down in the Wharf, was it when Elvis was there, the Elvis the firefighting thing was there, or no, another time?
Yeah, that probably would have been about then.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come back every year.
Hey, are they back yet?
Yes. Yeah, they're we're ready for the fire season here, and they would have we've had a few fires out the northwest of Victoria so far, but they'd be here waiting for their role to do.
Maybe it's going to be one of those seasons, but it usually is, Paula. Every season's usually a bushfire. I don't think last year was for some reason. I can't remember it, but But every other year in Australia, around Christmas, New Year's, fires everywhere, isn't it? Hot.
And yep.
Hot and dry. Yeah, we had a lot of rain, you know, a year ago, which means there'll be a lot of undergrowth and stuff to burn. So, I don't know. You need to. My grandpa used to say, "Burn or be burned," meaning you burn around your house, and you know what I mean. You just so that when a fire does come, your house is safe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's there's a lot of restrictions now. They won't let you burn off, and that's why there's a lot of undergrowth.
Yeah, it needs to be cleared, Paul. You need to clear it. You've just got to take care of yourself, I suppose. Have your own plan for that. So, what's the name of the tug? Do you work on different tugs, or you got a special boat that you work on?
I work on the tug called the Eureka.
Eureka.
Yeah, and there's six tugs there at the moment.
Mm.
And
all working flat out.
Yeah. Well, different times of the day. Yeah. And, we're all on the go.
And it's mostly container boats, isn't it? Containers.
Container and car boats and maybe an occasional passenger ship.
All right. The container ships are just amazing, aren't they? I mean, I can't believe how many containers they get on. They'll probably even get bigger.
Yeah, they're... the big ones that take three tugs, they're 18 containers across. So imagine 18, and then they've got all those on deck, plus the ones down below.
Oh, big job to unload them. Paul, what do you do on board?
I'm just a deckhand.
The deckie, you make sure it's tied up and all that sort of stuff, and hooked on and hooked off and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, just tie the rope on, let them pull it up, and then when they let go, I just pull it back and
let it go. All right, what's it like? Where are you this morning? Now, you down at the wharf or?
No, I'm on my way. I'm driving along. Sunbury Road, actually, ready to get onto the Ring Road and that West Gate.
Cool there this morning?
Yes, it was. It's gone up now to about 7 degrees.
Wow, it's amazing. And it was 40 where I live yesterday, so just goes to show we live in a great country, Paul. Good on you, mate.
Yeah, good on you. Thank you.
I'll see you again, I hope so.
Yeah, no worries. Cheers.
See you,
have
mate.
Have a good Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Brendan's in Brisbane. Morning, Brendan.
Morning, Macca. The weather up here for Brisbane, according to the Bureau's Access C model, which is a good hourly model, has the trough passing through Byron Bay and Toowoomba at 7, Brisbane at 9 p.m, and then clearing at midnight.
Oh, there you go. Well, you keep abreast of the bombs.
We need to. When you're riding your electric scooter, you don't want to get smashed with rain.
No, exactly. You've got an electric scooter?
Yeah, group ride, 10 of us, social men's event. Nice, good for you. Go for a ride.
Exactly. What else is happening, Brendan?
On Wednesday, we've got the social media under 16s getting kicked off, and I'll be joining the youth and encourage all the others across Australia to do the same and turn the bloody thing off.
And it seems like it's widely praised. What happens to the kids who've been using it for the last how long, 20 years? They just... what's happened there? Do you know what I mean? I mean, if this was meant to be done, it should have been done 20 years ago, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I've even sort of set up a few accounts with dates of age, a date of birth, that now I need to put them back and set them right, and I can't. Mm. You've got to show ID and stuff. But, you know, there'll be a bit of trauma with them, but I think it's a good thing. The social media is a significant threat to our productivity and intellect, I think, in the country. We did a comms upgrade site in central Queensland. Three sites, bit of work to be done for a week. One of those sites didn't have any internet access. It completed the work quicker, to a better quality, than the other two where the workers had access to their phones and internet.
There you go. Well, that's a... Well, you need all that sort of evidence of how things are going. And it seems, I'm just amazed that it's taken so long, that people have been saying this about social media, especially for kids. And I think it affects everybody too. I mean, I don't know about you, Brendan, but I think it affects everybody. And if you're relying on things like phones, you're not relying on your own good sense and all the time. You're reading a whole lot of stuff out there on social media. And look, I don't use it. I take phone calls on my phone and I make phone calls. And I get emails, but I take it with a grain of salt. That's all I use. I don't go on apps or any of that sort of stuff because I want to, unless I find information where I can find it.
Yeah, I think people need to get off the screens and think about things themselves, work their way through things, get those cognitive skills, because everything just gets pushed to you with these devices and you never get any time to even take things in.
I just wonder, as my first point was, what about the kids who haven't had this ban for the last 10 or 15 years? What's to become of them?
They might struggle a bit. Keep an eye on them. And Pete's got a good song, Looking at My Phone. Play that. That might lift their spirits. The video clip's great.
Yeah. I'll play it for you a little later, Brendan. All right, mate. Good luck. And you'll cool down a minute?
Yes. All good.
All right, mate. All right. See you in Brizzy sometime.
Cheers, Macca.
See you, mate. Bye. Carmel's in Camberwell. Morning, Carmel.
Good morning, Macca. It's 28 degrees here at the moment and the sun is just coming up and it's going to be another warm day.
Uh-huh. And what are you what are you up to, Carmel?
So we're travelling to Catherine to see family for Christmas. Normally we go up to... I think I've rung before, go up and see them on the cattle stations in the drive. We didn't get there this year. So we decided that we'd go for Christmas. We've left our van in Brisbane. We just got the other vehicle, our Land Cruiser. Yesterday it reached, so we were outside of Mount Isa. It was 40 degrees, went in for a fuel stop and the gentleman behind the counter had taken the ground temperature and showed me it was 50.8. That was at, I think it was just about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was, really warm yesterday. So.
that's warm, isn't it?
It was. We started the morning with wind, then we got the heat, and then by the time we got to Camberwell, we had a light shower from a little storm. There was nothing much. It was enough to wet the windscreen and wash the car, the dust off the car. But other than that, and stock, they're moving heaps and heaps of cattle into, so out of Brisbane, the first day we saw 50 cattle trucks. Second day, I think it was 30 or something, but yesterday there was only about 12.
And where are they going to?
I should imagine they'd be going to the meatworks at Binmore.
Uh-huh.
They all look like fat cattle from what we could see when one was stopped at Miles and checked them out. They're coming out of central Queensland. They're moving plenty of feed through there. It's getting a bit drier now. Yesterday, between where were we? Winton, now through Mount Isa, out to Camberwell. Stocks, the feed on the ground's a bit sparse, but
So I'd like to be in Camberwell this morning, Carmel. 28 degrees, did you say?
Yes, at the moment, and it'll get, I don't know what the expected maximum is.
It'll be getting up there.
Yeah.
You're just about to cross the border, are you?
Yeah, so we'll head off early, try and get some miles before it gets too hot. And later in the day, we'll stop when it gets a bit too hot.
You should be in a phone box, actually, in Camberwell. Is it quiet in Camberwell this morning, mate? Where are you?
So we're at the post office hotel. I heard very many trucks go through this morning. Last night there was quite a few. We're having dinner and watching them go down the main street. So a lot of them were... Right. Actually, I've just heard one go through now. I could hear it.
Your phone breaks up a little bit, Carmel, which is a shame. Carmel, so and where are your kids in the Territory? Whereabouts are they?
So they've now moved to Catherine. So
Catherine.
Left the panel station. He's a stock agent for Elders now, so bye.
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit, Carmel, unfortunately. I don't know why, but that's the nature of the beast. But, look, enjoy your trip. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for the report from Camberwell. I wish I was there this morning. Lovely and quiet in a country town this morning. Beautiful.
Macca, I'll talk to you again sometime.
See you, Carmel. Brett's in Snug. Morning, Brett.
How are you, Macca? Good day.
Yeah, good. What's happening?
Yeah, mate. We moved down here a couple of years ago from Sydney, and I just sort of paint a bit of a picture of what I moved. I moved from around your way. I was at Peakhurst, grew up at Peakhurst for 63 years. Came down here. We've got 35 acres for and a lovely home for about the price of a two-bedroom unit in Cronulla.
Wow.
And, I'm looking out the window at the moment out over Opossum Bay and Tinderbox, and I can see the north end of Bruny Island and then all the way across almost to Port Arthur.
I looked at the weather yesterday because it was stinking hot. We're at Peakhurst. And I looked at Hobart and it was, I don't know, 15 degrees or 12 or something. And Melbourne was cool and Adelaide was cool. And I thought, oh, to be in Hobart, oh, to be in Lonnie, oh, to be anywhere with that, out of the heat. I can't deal with it. Because I don't have air conditioning because of the price of electricity. Here's my electricity bill for this year, and I don't use heaters and anything, but this last winter was very cold, so I had it on for 3 weeks, and my bill doubled. In 3 weeks, that's all I had it on. I thought, no, I'm not going to put it on anymore. And I have a very low bill, mostly about $350 for my electricity bill for a quarter. And this last electricity bill was $790. So the cost of electricity is just unbelievable. So while you'd have, air conditioning, I mean, you need it, but yeah. Can anyone afford it?
Yeah, not down here. Well, yeah, they're telling you that it's gonna be cheaper. It's not. It's only going one way. My wife's actually in Sydney and rang me yesterday, and we moved here because we both like the cooler weather. And she said, oh, "I can't believe it. It's like 39 degrees." And
yeah,
I said, "Well, I was down in Kingston, and I said it's 16 degrees here. We've had the fire. We don't have, air conditioning as such. We've got a fireplace.
Hmm.
We've had it on right up until two nights ago."
It's so amazing. What a country we live in. It's great. I love it.
Exercise. I've got to chop some wood, but that's good. And there's, there's plenty of timber laying around at the back of our property. So that's that bit of exercise. And we could put the fire on and it's nice and toasty. And we've got this amazing view. I'm looking to the north. I can see Canani, Mount Wellington behind Hobart. And that's had snow on it up until dustings up until a couple of weeks ago.
Uh-huh. And Brett, what's happening in Snug today?
Well, we've got the Margate Hills Community Group. We're meeting this afternoon at Drew Point. We do a little plant and produce swap. So I've got a little bit of a greenhouse. So I'll take some stuff down there, and we'll have a barbie and swap a bit of gear between each other. So I'll take some nice little mini cabbages and some tomato plants and some lemon sorrel and whatever else I can pull out of the greenhouse and maybe bring some different stuff back.
Has this move of yours been in the pipeline for a long while, or you just did it on the spur of the moment?
It was in COVID, and we said we're over the construction and the traffic and the heat and everything of Sydney. I work in the building industry in Sydney for a long time, and a property came up, and I had a mate down here who was in building, and we said, can you go and have a look at this for us, Drew? And he said, yep, and he had a look. Anne-Marie, my wife, saw in the backyard this silver lid, and she said to Drew on the, when he called, what's that thing in the back? He said, oh, it's a fire shelter. And she said, oh, no way, I'm not going down there. And I said, well, it's a good thing. It's a bunker where you can dive into if you're in trouble. And she said, no. Anyway, we decided that it wasn't a great property. So we put a bid in, didn't see it, took my mate's word that it was a great property. And, yeah, like I said, for the price of a two-bedroom unit in Cronulla, we've got
You're laughing.
Fantastic views.
You're laughing, Brett. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
You too, Macca.
I'll see you in Snug sometime.
Good on you. Keep it up.
See you, mate. Bye. Margaret's in Lonnie. Good morning, Margaret.
Morning, Macca. How are we?
You good?
Yep. I'm just ringing to see if you'd be interested in a bit of a chat about our Launceston Nativity display, which we've got for our second year this year. And because of a wonderful local lady gave us her entire collection, we have 349 different nativity sets set up in our beautiful Holy Trinity Church with magical little lights all around it, and it is just superb. It's just everyone who's come in so far has been really impressed, and it's open every day through till Christmas.
And,
trying to put the real Christmas back in there.
Good on you. What's the name of the church? Where is it?
Holy Trinity Church.
Holy Trinity, right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll keep I think that's lovely, and everybody loves that, to see something that's traditional that maybe reminds you of a time gone, and I think it's a wonderful thing. So good on you.
Yeah, we went to Bavaria in 2019, and we're just blown away by Christmas over there and all the Christmas markets. Had big nativity sets everywhere, and we even remember in Frankfurt when we first arrived, we were sitting in a kind of food hall, and a girl dressed as an angel appeared, and we hardly saw any Santas, and she was handing out chocolates. She was the local ambassador for Christmas for the council. And Santas were really a rare species over there, and it was just such a different Christmas. And when we said when we came back we'd have to do something about, you know, just bringing back the real Christmas story. Whether people believe or not, it's a different thing. But I think our traditions, our culture, we need to keep that story alive.
I'm with you 100%, Margaret. Can people see that online if they can't get down to Lonnie?
If they go to our Facebook page, Holy Trinity, Launceston,
yeah.
There is a little 3-minute video there which whips around quite a lot of them.
All right.
And, yeah, we've got a whole section of sort of international and Indigenous ones, a lovely one painted by the Santa Teresa people up in Northern Territory in their spirituality section. And a whole section of about 50 of the little and large snow globes, which you see them in the shops now with Santas and Rudolphs and things in them, but I didn't realise that they were a really big thing, perhaps 20 years ago when this lady was every year getting the catalogues from Myers and Harris Scarf and everyone to buy another one each year.
Good on you, Margaret. People will make a path to your beta path to your Holy Trinity. Good on you.
Okay, you have a great Christmas.
See ya.
Bye then.
G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, good morning, Macca. Andrew from Bundaberg.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm sitting here with my boy, Clancy, who was 14 yesterday. He's turned 15 today, and that means he can fly solo first time. So here in about 40 minutes, he's going to do his first solo flight. So he's a young fella that he's only about 3 foot high, and he's... When he started lessons, he needed to sit on cushions, and he made little extensions for his legs so he could reach the rudder pedals. But he's also a kid that's shunned technology, wouldn't have a phone, doesn't do social media. And, yeah, you just reminded me last week when you're talking about pilots and people becoming pilots and how it's not happening and it's expensive. And so this young fella's made his own money cutting wood, picking lychees, and, he saved his money up and he wanted to get a pilot license. So his first step today is to go solo.
So how long has he been flying, Andrew? How long has he been flying?
Well, he's pretty fortunate in that we have a little plane at home, and he has been getting a few unofficial lessons from me over the years, but he didn't start official flying lessons till April this year.
Uh-huh. But he's grown up in that sort of milieu, has he?
Yeah, he has, but he was never pushed into it by me or anyone else. He just, you know, if he wanted to do that, he would do it. And, it was his decision. It's what he wanted to do. So he wants to go right through and be commercial. But this stage, all he can do is go solo today on his 15th birthday. And then in another year's time, he can get his restricted pilot license. And then after that, he can go commercial and so on until he wants to fly the big jets eventually.
And so the online ban for 16-year-olds and under doesn't affect Clancy.
That's right. No, it doesn't affect him whatsoever. Not worried about that.
And how come he's unlike other kids or most kids who've got a phone and their parents buy them a phone almost straight away?
You know, he's the youngest of three siblings, and I think he's seen what has happened to his brother and sister that are pretty much addicted to their phones, like a lot of us are.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And he's thought, no, I don't want to go that way. So, yeah.
Well, isn't that refreshing? You've got to be pretty strong, I reckon, as a kid these days to shun. Look, I don't know. I'm not in the playground anymore, but I don't know what we did in the playground. What did we do in the playground? We used to push one another around and run around and act the fool, but we weren't we weren't looking at our phones. I know that because they didn't exist. So.
Yep.
I don't know, Andrew, but I think it's got to be all for good. And if he wants to get a phone later on in his life, he can. But if not, go to the local phone box. That's all.
It is a little bit tricky for us because he gets emails from school and he doesn't even check his emails. So he relies on other people to tell him what class he's meant to be at.
Well, he'll just rock up and say, oh, look, to the teacher, look, I'm not on email, so if you need to talk to me, ring me at home or I'll find out when I get to school.
Now, listen, Macca, he's sitting right here with me. Do you want to say hello?
Yeah, sure.
G'day, Macca. How you going?
I'm all right, Clancy. It's a big day for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. What sort of plane are you flying in your solo flight?
So the plane I'm flying when I go solo is a Cessna 172.
Uh-huh. I know not much about that. So that's a single engine?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a single engine, four-seater.
And this is the plane you've been learning on and stuff?
Yeah.
So I suppose all planes are different, aren't they? You've got to get used to a plane. It's like the pilots on the big planes, you know, if they're driving a 380 or if they're driving whatever they need, a 737 or whatever, you need to familiarise yourself with it. So I suppose the same with you. You can't just hop into a plane. You've got to find out what's going on. They're all a little bit different, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. If I, like, my dad's plane is a Cessna 175.
Mm.
It's pretty similar to the 172, but when I hop in it after the training plane, then it's like it's totally different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, well, that's good. And how long do you have to fly for in your maiden flight to get your whatever?
So going solo, I just do one circuit by myself.
Uh huh.
And then I start training again for my recreational pilot license, which I can get when I'm 16.
Uh-huh. And how many – do you have to do a certain amount of hours or is it an age thing?
I think it's 20 hours to get your recreational and you have to be 16.
Uh-huh. And Dad says you've, you know, been picking lychees and cutting wood to make some money. How much does it cost for an hour lesson in a plane? How much does that cost?
Yeah. An hour lesson is $500.
Holy mackerel. That's a bit of money, isn't it, eh?
Yeah.
I was talking to a pilot last week and he said, you know, not a lot of, you know, there's plenty of jobs, there's jobs for pilots, but you need to be well cashed up, don't you, really, to do that, continue that?
Yeah, absolutely. Some people just get their recreational and then they realise how expensive it is and they don't go any further.
Well, Clancy, good luck. What time is your flight? In about half an hour, is it?
It starts at 7, yeah.
Yeah, 7. That's Queensland time. Well, good luck. Let us know maybe next week how you went. And, good luck. And I'll come for a fly with you sometime, Clancy. I've always wanted to fly, but there's too many things to do in life.
Yeah, righto.
All right.
All right, thanks very much, Macca. Love your work.
Thanks, Clancy, and thanks, Andrew.
No worries, Macca. Have a great day.
Good on you, mate. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. Tony Foran talking to you from Brisbane.
Hi, Tony.
I've got a story to tell about Ted. I was a student at Kelvin Grove Teachers College, 1963-64, and Ted came there as a mature age student. He'd worked as a patrol officer in the Territory, and he kept regaling his seniors up there about what the dreadful opportunities for Aboriginal kids were as far as education was. And they eventually said to him, well, if you're so worried about it, you go and train as a teacher. And so he did. He packed up his wife and kids, came to Brisbane and did a two-year teacher training course here in Brisbane. And he was much older than us. We were all youngsters, about 17, 18, 19-year-olds. He was, I reckon, probably would have been 30-odd in those days. And he... anyway, you probably know Ted. Ted had a great love of AFL football, and when he was in Darwin as a youngster, he started St Mary's Football Club up there. And anyway, when he came to Teachers College, Australian Rules Football was very much a poor cousin in Queensland here. And so Ted approached the college principal, who was also a bit of an AFL fan, and said, we should start a footy team. So Ted rallied round and got a few guys who'd played AFL before, some of them at high school, and most of us only ever played rugby. And anyway, we started a team in 1964, and Ted was our first captain, absolutely inspirational bloke. And we didn't have a really big successful year because most of us were youngsters, and we played in the reserve grade competition here in Brisbane. And but anyway, after Ted graduated, he went back. I think he taught at Newcastle Waters, was his first school in the Territory.
Really?
And then, of course, he went on to I think the people in Canberra recognised what a great knowledge of Indigenous issues he had, and they seconded him to work down there for many years. And then he moved back to Alice, and when he was in Alice, of course, he teamed up with my brother Barney, whom you've spoken to in the past.
Barney Foran. How's Barney going?
Right. Barney's going well, yeah. He lives in Beechworth in Victoria now. He was up here visiting me in August, September. Yeah, he's going well. So, he was the one who sent me a message the other day to say that Ted had passed away. So, Ted was actually here in Brisbane last year. We had a 60-year reunion of that 1964 team, and Ted and Neris came all the way back here to Brisbane for that. It was just wonderful to see them. And he was 92-year-old, and we're all around about 80 now. Oh, that's the youngsters of us.
Yeah.
Ted was here at the reunion. We had a wonderful day, and of course Ted regaled us with a few songs, and then I actually sang the one about you don't call curry 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 one, which mentions Ted. I sang that one for Ted. So we had a wonderful day, and listening to that little snippet of songs you had there of Ted's music before I got on to you, and I thought, oh yeah, gee, hasn't he left a great cachet of Australian history for us? It's just wonderful.
Yeah, I'll say he's up there with the greats. You know, people who've done that. You know, when I first started doing this program, we had a music playlist, which is basically just the pop music of the day. That was back in the 80s. And I thought to myself, we should be playing more Australian music here. You look around, and there wasn't a lot. There was bits and pieces, but there wasn't a lot around. You know, there was Slim and things like that. But you wanted a wider spread of the sort of things you could play, and gradually that happened. And Ted really was instrumental in that, because I thought, oh wow, here's a bloke. You can here's a song which is identifiably Australian, and learned a bit of history and all that sort of stuff. And Billy Scott wrote the Hey Rain song, and John Williamson started to write songs. So gradually, the people who were writing Australian songs, so it was a lot easier, and then of course there was I Made 100 in the Backyard at Mum's, all those sort of songs. Yeah, you could you give yourself a bit of a flavour of your program and of your country.
And it's really, really wonderful that I think Ted's really set the scene for Australian songwriters to get their material out there, and people will listen to it. And of course, Ted was sort of even in his 80s, he was still, and even last year, when he came to our footy reunion, as I said, at 92, he'd driven from Alice Springs down round through South Australia and Victoria, New South Wales, been to a couple of music festivals down there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was still just he's an inspiration to us old blokes to keep going.
he was always travelling to places to play. He played in Tamworth for many years. And had a little place there in on the way into Tamworth, and Grant Lewis used to do his sound for him. And yeah, he was a real troubadour, wasn't he? A traveller.
Yep.
He loved to anywhere he could play and take his beer cart and away he'd go.
I caught up with him at the Nanango Country Music Festival. Nanango Country Music Muster.
Yeah.
I think, just as he was releasing the Black Caviar song. So he performed that there. So, I caught up with him then, and we had a few beers together, and I helped him sell some CDs and whatever and whatnot. So even though we didn't see each other all that often, I mean, it was just like when you caught up with him, it was just like yesterday.
Good on you, Tony.
Great memories. Thanks, Magga.
Thanks, mate. Right. Bye. On the line is our chef correspondent, but he's also our... I'm not sure what he's going to talk, but he's usually in our mosh pit, wherever good music is being played. Adrian Cook, good morning.
Good morning, Macca, and good morning, Australia. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, I think. What's happening, mate?
Just ringing up with a final report from the mosh pit for the year.
Uh-huh.
Went to Good Things Festival in Sydney yesterday.
Good Things Festival, yep.
Yep. It's not your Lady Gaga style music. It's much heavier, much louder. Mate, it was just fantastic. I went with my nephew who came up from Wollongong, and he's only a teenager, and we went out, and mate, it just went berserk.
It went off, as you usually say, Adrian. Adrian, what's the attraction of music that's loud and? Yeah, what's the attraction, mate? Adrian goes to bands called like Rage Against the Machine, who were out here a year or two ago, AC/DC, Midnight Oil, De Rigueur, all those bands that are really loud and have mosh pits. What's the attraction, Adrian? What's wrong with Lady Gaga?
Not saying anything's wrong with Lady Gaga. If you like that, that's fine. It's just I prefer my music a bit heavier, a bit louder. some of the bands that played yesterday were like Gwar. If you want to clear a room, put some Gwar on. Garbage, Weezer, Refused doing their final tour of Australia.
Or is that Refuse or Refuse?
Refused. Lorna Shaw, Garbage, All Time Low. It was headlined by Weezer and then Tool.
Yeah.
Tool just incredible, absolutely incredible, yeah. lots of moshing, lots of sweating. We did have I had a little bit of respite with my musical outings yesterday. James Rain from Australian Crawl made an appearance. He was on the bill, so I caught up with a bunch of his songs and everyone was singing along. It was great.
But, so it's called the Good Things Festival. Now, that was on in Melbourne and was on in Sydney yesterday, and I think it's on in Brisbane.
Brisbane today, yeah.
Today.
So if you've got a ticket, you're in for a hoot. You're in for a hoot, mate.
Well, it depends. But did you hear, I don't know, if Chris rang this morning. He's a truckie. He's on the highway, and he said he said there was 40, did he say 40 trucks or 80 trucks out of... 40 trucks carrying Lady Gaga's equipment out of there and to someone else. And I said, gee, that's a lot. And he said, no. Well, he said, Tay-Tay, Taylor Swift, she had 100 trucks full of stuff.
I heard that call this morning. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Well, exactly. But the Good Things Festival, it's out there. It is out there, but it's not mainstream, is it really? Or is it mainstream
now?
No,
it's not really your mainstream. It's more your sort of double J, triple J sort of music, the louder, the heavier. It must have been about 50,000 people there yesterday. It was just going off, mate, like a frog in a sock.
Oh,
mate, I wish
dear.
I wish it could have been there, mate. It was awesome.
Well, I don't know about that, Adrian, but it sounds, as long as you had a good time, mate, that's the main thing. The Good Things Festival.
Did have a good time, yeah.
So they packed that up last night, but they didn't have 40 trucks, did they? They probably had, I don't know. I think Chris was actually taking some of that gear. So that's the,
yeah.
When you think about all those trucks and all those people doing that and moving these festivals, a lot of money involved. That's what was a ticket worth, Adrian?
I think it was around 215.
Really?
So, I mean, you divide that up between about sort of 30 bands that were playing, you know, it's not too bad. Yeah.
At 50,000, let me work that out. It's 500,000 times 25. My maths is not good, but it's a couple of million. That's 25 times, yeah. It's quite a bit of money. So, yeah, they were doing all right. So one, and then they got to pay all the truck drivers and the trucks and all the loaders and the roadies and, my God.
And security and food vendors and volunteers. And
I haven't been to a Tay Tay concert. What do I get charged for a Tay Tay concert?
Too much, mate. I'm not sure.
A lot of money.
Yeah, I'm not sure, mate. It's not my cup of tea, but mate, whoever's going to Brisbane today, you are in for a treat. It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
It's going off.
There's five different stages. You can see as much or as little music as you want. Absolutely fantastic.
The Good Things
out the
Festival.
Year very well.
The Good Things Festival, and you can see Garbage, Refuse, All Time Low and other bands that just trip off the tongue.
Machine Head, Goldfinger, Kubla Khan, Day Seeker, all the big bands are there, mate.
And what about the mullet? Was the mullet de rigueur there at the...
Didn't really notice too many mullets.
I think, but there's a mullet thing on at the same time in the Good Things Festival, I think, in Brisbane today. I know we had an email about it. I don't know where it is on the pile of emails, but there's something about mullets and haircuts and things like that at the Good Things Festival. I don't know. Here it is now. I'm getting a late-breaking email. Free mullets and mohawks as Australia faces a hair loss epidemic, it says here. at the Good Things... See... Free mullets and mohawks at the Good Things Festival at Brisbane Showground today. Young festival barbers getting out fresh mullets and mohawks. And there's pictures of blokes with mohawks here, which don't, which defy description, really. But anyway.
Well, you could describe me as the man simply called Bald, the skid-lid kid. I've just sort of shaved my head. I've got no worries about a mullet or a mohawk.
And headline...
Just my voice holding up only just.
Yeah, well, it says here, you were talking about Garbage, the band Garbage. Well, it says here Shirley Manson from Garbage...
Shirley Manson, yeah.
...has famously always been upfront about everything from mental health to menopause, and apparently she's got a fantastic mullet. So...
I saw Garbage.
Maybe a mohawk.
Didn't look mullety to me, but it wasn't a mohawk, but it didn't really look mullety, but it could have been. Could have been, yeah.
Anyway, that's on there today at the Good Things Festival, mate. Adrian, I don't know what to say, but thank you for the report. We always like to keep updated with what's going on in the music world. Thanks, Adrian. If we had some Garbage or Refuse here, we could play some, but... we'll find it another time. All right, mate. Good on you.
Not a problem, Macca. Have a great Christmas and hope to see you in the new year.
Yeah, I'll see you in the mosh pit somewhere, eh?
Absolutely. Down at Richmond, mate.
Yeah, all right. Oh, that's right. We're playing. Are you going to Richmond? You coming to Richmond?
Oh, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. Good on you, mate. See ya.
See you, buddy.
That's Adrian, who's our mosh pit specialist. Ian Francis is my guest this morning. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Macca.
And with him is Dr. Susan Gaydon. How are you, Susan?
I'm well, thank you.
When you spoke to us there, you were at Alice Springs, is that right?
Uluru.
Uluru, yeah. You were at Uluru at a conference there.
Yeah, there was a KDMA conference and they talked about, one of the things was Japanese encephalitis, so I didn't know much about that.
In the paper the other day, yesterday, and mosquitoes and things like that.
Yeah.
And they're worried about it because wet, humid, summer, mosquitoes.
The only way to prevent to treat it, manage it, is to prevent it. There's no treatment.
Mm.
If you get it, you're in trouble.
Mm. So, what's that? Bowls of water around the place and all that sort of thing. So, where's it? Where's it mostly?
Look, I'm not an expert on that, but the north part of Australia,
mm.
like Darwin and FNQ, places like that,
mm, far north Queensland. So, you go to these conferences a lot?
Oh, no, they have them. The KDMA is the Ku-ring-gai District Medical Association.
I was going to ask you,
they have
what
gigs
the KDMA
all over the place, mm. and it's for GPs and specialists, and everyone gives talks, and we go to a nice place. We've had a couple of very good ones. We had a very good one around far north Queensland a year or so ago, and that was terrific. We saw it went up to Cape York and places like that.
Yeah, you were talking about the little spots in your eyes in that little talk, weren't you? And
The little, if you look at the iris, the edge of the pupil is normally very smooth. It's just a slight bit of pigment there,
mm.
but it's got bumps called flocculi. They're brown, and there are some other causes of that, but one of the big causes is iris flocculi due to a Crook aorta.
Oh, really?
Chromosome 10.
Uh-huh.
And those people, if I see that on a new patient, I ask them, is there a family history of your near relatives dropping dead from a dissecting ruptured aortic aneurysm? And that's what it's all about. So you can save their lives.
Mm, and that's what I think I said to you, the eye is the mirror of the body. You can look at the eyes and maybe tell what's going on with the
Absolutely.
Rest of, in the rest of the
100%,
place.
100%, yep.
Yeah. Tell me about you and eyes. How did that start?
Well,
was it just accidental? Or
In ophthalmology,
mm.
it's really eyes and brains or eyes and bodies. Someone showed recently they were connected, which is a good thing to know.
Well, apparently then.
Yeah. At medical school, we had 6 years of medicine at UCID.
Mm.
I think you went to UCID, didn't you?
Mm, I did, yeah. Well, I was there.
And, in fifth year med, me too. Fifth year med, they had a little few weeks of ophthalmology, and I was helped to do the exam and got a prize in ophthalmology.
Oh, I see.
I thought I'd better do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's sort of happenstance, really, isn't it? I mean, I think when you start doing something, and well, certainly for me, you start doing things and you find something that you like, you know, you don't really have an idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some people grow up and want to be a doctor or want to be a whatever they want to be, but often I think things change, and
mm.
if you're not really sure and you're not...
I don't know why it was. I was mentored. Everyone in medicine gets mentored to a certain extent by a guy called Jeff Hepwell, who was he's dead now, but he was an ophthalmologist at North Shore where I was a student.
Hepwell?
Jeff Hepwell.
He related to the Hepwell because played
well,
for Sydney.
Who knows? I don't think he was. He liked to watch football, but I don't think he played it.
Yeah.
Hepwell was a player in the Wallabies, wasn't he?
Rugby union,
yeah.
I think he played for Sydney Uni, but it doesn't matter.
Anyway, so then I got the prize in fifth year med.
Mm.
I shared it with somebody. I forget who it was. I think a lady who became a gynecologist. But anyway,
some of my friends have got macula. Something we didn't hear about years ago. Has that just been recently discovered, or why do we hear about it now so much more than we did 20, 30 years ago?
Well, it's a very common cause of sudden visual loss when you're older.
Mm.
And the reason we didn't talk about it much in the past was if someone came to us. I went to bed the previous night seeing, woke up blind, centrally blind in the eye. We would pat them on the back and say, well, tell us when the next one happens, we'll look at that too. And so we looked at that too and didn't do anything. Now, what is dramatically changed is we can give injections straight into the eye and we can fix it if we get them early.
Mm.
So that's very exciting.
Mm. And when you say early, should people be going?
Well, they should. Those who are known to have some hemorrhage signs like white spots in the retina called drusen, most of them go onto what's called an Amsler chart. It's like a grid they stick on their refrigerator with a magnet, and they check themselves every day. And if there's any sudden distortion in the square grid, they ring up and we fit them in straight away. And if they've got hemorrhage, we inject them and it fixes them. You got to get them early.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, we always hear about people have operations on their cornea for
Cataracts.
Cataracts and things like that, don't we? We've always heard of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, the commonest operation in the world is cataracts. It's probably the most successful. I don't do it anymore, but I used to, and got very good results. And now all the youngsters, you would call them kiddies, or I call them ankle biters, who are now consultants, they're getting brilliant results because the technology is so good and they're taught so well.
There you go. Yeah. And is I assume that ophthalmology, like every other branch of medicine and every other branch of everything, is changed dramatically since when you started.
Yeah. Well, I write a few papers, and I still write papers. And when I first started writing them in the 1980s, every time you submitted something, it would get in without any questions. Now you've got to go through a huge process, and there's great competition because it's sort of a publish or perish world, you know?
I'm talking to Dr. Ian Francis. He's an associate professor of ophthalmology. With him is Dr. Susan Gayden. Susan, you're not an ophthalmologist, are you? You're a radiologist.
Radiologist. Yeah. I work at Concord Hospital.
Uh-huh. And how's things in radiology?
Radiology, you're talking about technological expansion. Well, radiology is the classic. I started too many years ago when we had very few procedures, and then ultrasound, CT, MRI. It's just taken off wonderfully, so that almost every patient that comes into hospital gets some sort of imaging. Uh-huh. And it's very successful in sorting out what's going on really quickly.
And how did you get into that?
I guess I had a young child. I was pregnant in final year, and I had to do something that I could do. And radiology was pretty much 9 to 5 in those days, whereas everything else had nights and weekends. I certainly had to be on call, but I didn't have to be in the hospital all night and all weekend. But my young son, who's very familiar with coming into hospital with me, sitting down and putting stickers on things while I tried to sort the patients out.
Okay.
He's now 50.
Oh, Craig's at Currawa Surf Club. I know Currawa Surf Club. Good morning, Craig.
G'day, Macca. How you going, mate?
Good. How's the surf at Currawa? So that can be a dangerous beach, Currawa, can't it?
It can be, very sadly. Yes, I know that history too. I used to row surf boats here. But no, it's pretty blowing out this morning. Not much happening. But lots of people enjoying that lovely boardwalk along the front there. So
yeah, I've always thought it'd be a good place to do a program there as an outside broadcast one morning.
I look forward to seeing you there. I'll send you a coffee.
Are you a member of the surf club, are you, Craig?
Oh, I have been, yes. I am, yeah. I used to race surf boats here back in the day. I did the Uncle Toby's and Utah Grain series and all of those wonderful things. But not so now. I'm a shadow of my former self, you might say.
Join the club. Join the club. Let's get together.
Yeah. Compare our shadows.
The former self group, yes.
That's it.
Yeah. How? What's on your mind, Craig?
Well, I heard your callers talking about the Battle of Britain and the Bomber Command. I've got to know in the twilight of his life a beautiful man called Geoffrey Bell, who fought in Bomber Command. And he passed away last week. And we're having his funeral tomorrow. But something very special we've arranged for him and his life and his family. He's a national treasure. He died at 105, a very humble man.
Wow.
From the town of Clifton, just near Toowoomba.
Yep.
And I got to know him. I'm president of the old boys at the Southport School, and he's our oldest living old boy. So for the last few years, we've done a very, I'd call intimate, Anzac service for him. And sent a cenotaph party up from the school. But anyway, it was his time, he's passed, and I'm also, ironically, president of the Southport Flying Club. You and I have spoken before. I rang you during the Avalon Air Show and gave you a field report.
All right.
Our club has decided to do a missing man formation over his town at the cenotaph. He's being paraded through the town tomorrow. And the Royal Australian Air Force is supporting us by dispatching a Spartan aircraft tomorrow as well. So I just wanted the community to know if they're around and would like to see something very moving and special. The whole town of Clifton is going to stand in the street for him. And if you look up rather than look down, you'll see a beautiful missing man formation and Spartan aircraft.
Explain to people what a missing man formation is.
It's a chevron, it can be 3, 4 or 5 aircraft, but one of the aircraft does a manoeuvre. It moves away from the formation, and which symbolises the missing man. It's used internationally to symbolise, and it's used at those kind of events. So.
A lovely thing to do, isn't it? And a thing that can happen in country towns. I mean, that's the great part about community anywhere you go, isn't it? You can do something like that. And really, that's what life's all about. I mean, we miss it because we're rushing around. I play this song called Rushing to Nowhere because I met this bloke who was in a band, and I said, what's the band called? He said, Bubba. Bubba Bishop, that's right. And he said, oh, it's just, it's just sort of outlaw country, like Willie Nelson, outlaw country, and it's really just down-to-earth, decent Aussie stuff. And that's what this is, Craig. And Jofra sounds like a lovely old bloke, and obviously the people of Clifton took him to heart and just realised what a little treasure he was.
Exactly right. So wherever you are in Australia tomorrow at 11 o'clock, just pause for a moment and think, one of our, last surviving veterans, he's passed at 105. And he saw a lot of things. I know he was in two serious crashes during the war and lost a lot of his mates. So he chose to live his life like he should, given he was one of the lucky ones.
Absolute carnage. And you just know, I mean, you can tell some of the people who survived Bomber Command were flying in 44 and 45, but... In 40 and 41 and things like that, and 42, God, they're lucky to turn. You know all the terrible statistics about the people who didn't come back. Just
that's right.
And Churchill called. What did he say? The people who we owe everything to the Bomber Command people, and also the Spitfire pilots, because life would have been terribly different, Craig.
Oh, exactly, and I think that's a poignant reminder of how lucky we are.
Exactly. Did you hear that little quote? Was it John O'Kell talking about he'd been to Egypt and he said the mess in Egypt, and then he came back and he said, we just don't realise what a lovely country we have, and people still, urinate on it, if you know what I mean, and just don't appreciate what we've got here. And you can look around the world, it's a basket case, I reckon.
Yeah, but let it stay over there, not here.
Exactly. Good on you, Craig. I'll see you at Currawa.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Magga.
See you, mate. Bye. Bye. Our correspondent from military, Pam Cupper, is online. Good morning, Pam.
Oh, g'day, Ian. Yeah, it's I know it's a little early, but things get busy towards Christmas, and there's a couple of anniversaries coming up on the 18th of December. Mm. It's a commemoration of the anniversary of the end of the Battle of Verdun in France, which was the longest battle of the First World War.
Wow.
And then on the 20th of December is the anniversary of the Australians leaving Gallipoli overnight on the 19th, 20th of December, 1915. And I was in Verdun earlier in the year. It's really interesting, the difference there. It was a massive battle for the French, and they say that one third of all French servicemen served at Verdun. And for the French, it's really like how we view Gallipoli, perhaps, or the Western Front. But had Verdun was right near the German border, so had it fallen to the Germans, the road was really open to Paris. So everything really depended on it. And it was interesting to see the differences between commemoration for Commonwealth soldiers on the Western Front and at Verdun, where they don't have, the grave of the unknown soldier sort of idea. They put the unknown dead in ossuaries. So there are all these giant ossuaries where you can look upon the bones of the dead.
But, really?
It's quite different. It's obviously a French way of viewing things. We find it a bit strange. But, and they had the Sacred Way. There was a sort of a road that led up to Verdun, and that's obviously where all your supplies and your men had to travel on that road. And if anything stopped that happening, then you would probably lose Verdun. The French would have lost Verdun, but they called it the Sacred Way, Voie Sacrée, and for 72 kilometres of road, that road for the whole of 1916 during the Battle of Verdun, the whole road was kept open. So if a truck broke down, it would be pushed off the road in seconds so that there was no delay. And throughout the year, a truck passed every 14 seconds. So, you know, and it was lovely because the road today is designated RD 1916 in commemoration of that.
There you go.
And of course, yeah. And, of course, Gallipoli was evacuated and it was planned to be evacuated on the 20th of December, but it was just assumed that Australians would be killed or captured by the Turks. So there were all these little tricks so that the Turks would be deceived. So they had an idea of, they did the silent stunt, so they would go in the weeks leading up to December the 20th, they'd go silent. The Australians wouldn't fire for several hours. And then the Turks just assumed that this was, oh, you know, they're getting ready for winter and so on. And then they slowly got people, you know, the men off, and they walked along. They're only evacuated at night under cover of darkness. And if you had to bring anything in, that was brought in daylight so that the Turks could actually see things coming in.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, they did things like cover all of the walking tracks with sacks so that no sound as the men walked off. And then they were put onto piers, again covered with sacks, and it was all silent. Of course, in the war memorial, they've got the drip rifle, which would fire after that particular location had been left. They could still continue firing. So there are all these little tricks. And Brudnell White, General Brudnell White, who's actually buried not very far from Ballarat, he planned the evacuation so meticulously, and it's often sort of said if there'd been so much planning put into the landing as there was into the evacuation, the Australians would have been in Constantinople within a week. But, yeah,
or if there'd been so much planning into Snowy 2.0. yeah, he sounds like the bloke we sorely miss. Yeah. A couple of things. So the 20th, what was that? Was the first day or the last one?
That's the last day. So on the morning of the 20th of December, the virtually everyone had evacuated Anzac, and there were just overnight on the previous night, the 18th to the 19th, and then on the 19th to the 20th. So they evacuated all of the, well, there were Australians, New Zealanders and British there too, but they were all evacuated, and there was an expectation that the Turks would discover this and, of course, fire on them or capture them. And so the last one left, very early in the morning, 4 a.m. Mm. on the 20th of December. So the last Australian was there. They had a couple of people posted just in case there were any stragglers who came down from the hills at the last minute. And the last steamboat sort of sailed off just after 4 a.m.
Is there any records of the Turks saying, oh, they're gone? Oh.
Yeah, well, when it was all silent.
Were they surprised or?
They were totally deceived, apparently. They were deceived. Yeah, because they just thought, oh, this is another silent stunt.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there were
giving us the cold shoulder, not talking to us.
Right. Yeah, and they played a cricket match at Shell Green, which is sort of a little flat area down by the beach, just south of Anzac Cove. So the famous cricket match was there, and they played a cricket match so that the Turks overlooking it, you know, would see it. Well, this is all normal. You know, the Australians are still playing cricket. And the Australian cricketers who go there now, the Australian cricket team has been there, for example, and they play cricket on Shell Green even today. And I think in next year I'm planning a trip over there for, you know, a tour group, and so I think we'll play cricket at Shell Green again.
Exactly. I was going to ask you if you still do tours, because I know you've done a tour in the past, and that's why you know so much, and the reason you know so much about Gallipoli is you wrote a book along with Phil. Called Gallipoli, a Battlefield Guide.
That's it, yeah. So that was the first of the guides they're now.
Is your tour time to go around Anzac Day, is it? Or?
No, you don't. Look, I'd avoid it at Anzac. I personally would avoid it at Anzac Day because it's so crowded, and I think a lot of people appreciate a quieter visit.
Like so, Peter Weir.
Yeah, that's right. Peter Weir, and you could hear as he walked up Shrapnel Valley, he said he could hear the ghosts of Anzac. So it's in September of next year, and so Phil and I will be spending our time doing that because, you know, the people who come on the tour, we try and really make it for them. So if they have relatives or even just community members and so on associated with their towns and so on, they then have the history of that location and the involvement of those people.
Well, it's part of our history, isn't it? It's almost a sacred site, Gallipoli, in lots of ways. And today's Pearl Harbor Day, speaking of... And there's been a lot of... I mean, that was just a terrible time too, wasn't it? You know, not expecting everyone's swanning around on a Sunday morning and then boombo.
And it's Sunday today. It's 7th of December isn't always on a Sunday.
Have you been to Pearl Harbor?
I haven't been to Pearl Harbor, no. And I probably won't... I'll still do plenty of travel. I travelled earlier this year and I was by myself and I loved that. But the tour next year I think might be my final tour that I organise because, you know, surprisingly, I didn't know that you actually got older, you know.
My mother said to me, she said, you turn around and you're 65. And I thought, what's she on about?
I agree with your mother totally.
All right, Pam. Good luck.
So I'll give you a call from Gallipoli or the Western Front.
I might even come. I've threatened to do a program overseas, but I don't know. I'll have to see the boss.
Well, there's a seat there for you if you pass.
All right, okay. All right, Pam, good on you.
Fantastic, Ian. Great.
See you. Bye. My guests this morning are Dr Ian Francis. He's an associate professor of ophthalmology, and Dr Susan Gaydon. She's a radiologist. Excuse me. A little later in the program, after the news, don't miss it. I get a letter once a year from a bloke called Brownie. Brownie used to live in a container on the Mitchell Plateau in WA, up there amongst the palm trees and stuff, and he's just an interesting bloke. He's the bloke that said to me, a man without a fire is a man without a life, meaning that there's some essentials in life, water and air, and fire is one of them. I mean, I always love a fire. As a kid, you love a fire, looking at the flames, and there's a great song about, and the faces in the fire are the friendliest I've ever seen, you know, when you're sitting and gazing in a fire. I just think it's wonderful. And there's the other thing, I'll just get up. I read the papers because I glaze them. And this is in the telly yesterday. It's called Backyard Cricket Guide. And as I was, you know, and then I'm driving past in Sydney and in Melbourne, and the high rise is just astronomical. And I think, well, those poor little buggers aren't going to be playing backyard cricket. Even when I started to play, I made 100 in the backyard of Mum's, which in fact my mother told me about. She said, I heard this song, Ian. She didn't call me Ian, she called me Neen or Joe. And she said, I heard this song, I made 100 in the backyard of Mum's. That was about 1986 or something. And I just sort of started doing the program. And so I said, oh, yeah, well, Mum, I'll drag it out. And so it became an anthem for the program, and I used to play it, and people would complain. So the more they complained, the more I played. You could do that sort of thing in those days. That's when you could do sort of all sorts of outlandish things. So I played it sometimes three times, sometimes four times in a day, and had fun with it. But even then, we never played cricket in the backyard. We had no room in our backyard. We'd play in the road. Usually, or up the park, or whatever. But the symptom was, and people loved it because I think it was very Australian, you know, to have a garbage bin and some, you know, away you go, So somebody couldn't take their stumps home if they owned the stumps. We had a garbage bin. So, but anyway, yeah, and it's nice to have the backyard cricket guide in the thing, but I thought, gee, isn't it funny how times change and we're all living in high-rise now because we're trying to fit so many people in such a rush, and it's been my mantra that you can't do anything in a rush. You can't do my little aside to Snowy 2.0, I have it on good authority that there was very little planning went into Snowy 2.0, and if they'd have planned it a bit more. But it's the same with everything. You don't rush anything. You can't rush your study or school. You can't rush anything. You can't rush playing cricket, batting. You can't rush anything. Just take your time with everything. But anyway, my guests, Ian Francis and Susan Gaydon. Good morning again, folks. Nice to see you. So, Ian, are you still travelling around to these, what do you call them,
KDMA? Well, I have different gigs. I think there's one coming up in Queensland. Where is it?
April.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that'll be just a weekend and we give lectures and have a bit of a look around and see, is it SeaWorld?
Yeah.
So, I've never seen SeaWorld. I hope the punters there don't get eaten by the killer whales. Happened recently to someone.
No. Anyway, what I meant to say was Brownies writes to me, that little dissertation about cricket. Brownie writes to me about life and once a year, and he lives in Thailand, and about meditation, and not so much meditation in a Buddhist way, but yes, he's into that, but meditating, I go into the garden and I think I was reading Brownie's letter yesterday and I thought, well, that's my meditation, that's what I do. And everyone's got their own sort of way they meditate. Do you sort of have a meditating time, Ian?
Well, I've been a Christian since I was 15, so I have a meditation every day.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
What about you, Susan?
Yeah, I like you, grown up doing a lot of gardening, and I find that is a wonderful way to connect with nature and just give the mind a rest.
Yeah, exactly. And they say that, you know, they say that. But when I read things about that, it's all in front, and that's what Brownie will say in his letter. It's all in front of you. Your future's in your own hands. Mm. You don't have to worry about what's going on around the world because there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing you can do about Putin and the Communist Party of China or anything like that and the horrible things. There's nothing you can do about it, but you can heal yourself.
Yeah, focus the mind.
Yeah, and there's one of our resident doctors. We have several resident doctors here on the program, Dr. Ross. He said, practice a bit of self-belief and not worry about where you are on the economic scale. People shouldn't worry, but they do. I don't know. But anyway, so interesting. So, Ian, do you still practice or?
Yeah, not as much as I did. Mm. I don't only do one operation these days. I biopsy the artery in the head to make a diagnosis of what's called temporal arteritis. If you make that diagnosis, you save the patient's vision and you save their life. Fantastic thing to do.
And is that a new technology thing? Or is
I've invented a few things that make it a bit easier, a bit better. But no, it's been around a long time.
Mm. So as for people's eyes, because I know, you know, people wake up, as you said. What's the best procedure, I suppose, for people with who are, you know, over 50 or 60 and with their eyes? Should they always get an eye checkup? Because you don't usually get glasses and then what you're saying, you can wake up one morning and you're partly blind.
That's right. Mm. Well, I think maintaining good health's good. Blood pressure, diabetes, heart, you know, lipids, all that stuff's important. Exercise is vital. Mm. Not smoking is essential. Mm. But getting checked by an eye care provider is very important because you can pick up macular degeneration very early and then you can give the patient tablets which will, in many cases, I've had hundreds of patients who've reversed their early macular degeneration. It's spectacular.
With tablets?
Tablets, yeah.
And you said needles as well, they get needles?
Well, when they get the hemorrhage, then you give the needles.
Mm.
And the needles work brilliantly if you get them early. If you wait too long, then the hemorrhage gets organised and you get a scar and you can't do much about that. Mm. You've got to get them early.
Okay. Now, where do you live, Ian?
I live at DY.
Mm. On the beach? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, where the
shark... But I work in Chatswood, Prince of Wales a little bit, Northern Beaches quite a lot. That's what I do.
And Susan, what about
you? I live at Camaray, but I work at Concord Hospital. Uh-huh. But these days I work mainly from home, uh-huh. which is a real luxury. It's wonderful.
Yeah, well, you can do that, I suppose, can you? You're looking at...
Yes, the hospital supplied me with computers, and when I sign on, I dial into the hospital network, and all my trainees put reports under me, and I can talk to them through Microsoft Teams and get them to review things, and it's a very positive exercise. And I do go into the hospital occasionally, but most of them don't really know who I am. I'm the dinosaur that sort of never appears.
Lovely to talk to you both. Continue to give us a ring from wherever you are, Ian, if you're around somewhere, because it's always interesting, because we never, you know, going to a conference, I know you can tell us about the dolphins at SeaWorld, but there's lots of interesting people at those conferences, and sharing information is what it's all about really here. And if it encourages people to go and have a checkup or whatever, that's a good thing. Dr. Ian Francis, Dr. Susan Gaydon, lovely to talk to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Becca.
David Graham, are you there, David?
Yes, Ian, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Where it's a pleasure. Were we in Darwin last year? Was it last year or the year before?
No, I reckon it was just last year. I don't know. This year's been one that's felt like about 3-1 at the moment. But no, I'm pretty sure it was only just last year, eh?
David, look, you sent your song in to me, and the song's called
"Merry Christmas to the Losers."
So that immediately everybody's embraced by that. See, we're all embraced by that. We're all losers. I remember, like, I was in a petrol station one time filling up in a country town, and I must have parked there too long because this bloke came up behind me and said, "Loser." And I don't know what it was all about. But anyway, Merry Christmas to the Losers. Tell us about the genesis of the song. I mentioned Darwin, we were in Darwin last year and we were in Rainforest Park, and I found out why it was called Rainforest Park, or Rain Tree Park, sorry. Rain Tree Park. Rainforest is in Brisbane. Rain Tree Park, and I asked stupidly, why is this called Rain Tree Park? And the bloke just, "Look, what are those?" And there were rain trees, two big rain trees in this park, and it was called Rain Tree Park. So we were there, and one of the guests we had was the choir of guests were the choir of man, which is a choir of blokes. And I assume, David Garnham, you're one of those. And they came and sang for us, but they've done this. Who wrote this song? Don't tell me it's written by AI.
No, I wouldn't allow that. No, it was written by myself, but it was kind of, what's the mother of invention? Necessity.
Yeah, necessity. That's right, yes.
So
I was going to Google it on see if AI could tell me, but anyway, go on.
But so a couple of years back, I dipped my toe into the world of theatre because I wrote a play which incorporated Christmas carols and Christmas songs, well-known ones as a part of the narrative. And what happened is we had a two-week run up here, all booked in. The show was about to go start in a day and a half, and we were tapped on the shoulder by our friends, the publishers for the estate of John Lennon, saying, "Yeah, we've changed our mind. You can't use 'Merry Christmas, War is Over.'" So I kind of had a momentary freak out and then went home. I was like, "All right, well, we need..." And this was the big closing number of the show as well.
All right.
So I was like, okay. So that's why in the title of the song, there's kind of the homage to the John Lennon track. So yes, "Merry Christmas, open parentheses to the Losers, close parentheses." Just basically, it was a chance for me to write an anthem for people that might not necessarily enjoy Christmas as much as the cheesy, cliched, glossy images that are portrayed in most Christmas carols.
Yeah, look, the first thing I wanted to say was that we did a little special tribute to Ted Egan before, And we were talking about, because he rang one, we were always talking to him on the program for very, sometimes we were there with him and sometimes he'd ring up about something. He rang up about his song Black Caviar, but he called the song The People's Horse because he couldn't use the word Black Caviar because the people who owned Black Caviar had patented or whatever you do, copyrighted the name. So it's a bit the same as yours, yours with John Lennon. So everybody's... So make sure, ladies and gentlemen, you copyright things. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, really, isn't it, when you think about it, because it's everywhere, but I don't know, maybe they did that so you couldn't have another horse called Black Caviar, or I don't know. But
outside my pay grade, Macca.
Yeah, but also I'm sure John Lennon wouldn't mind. I mean, but anyway, so the deal is the song is Merry Christmas for the losers or to the losers?
Yeah, to the losers.
All right.
To us all.
to us all. And you're playing that today somewhere?
Yes. We what's become quite a big part of the Christmas music scene in the Top End. Like this show, it's very hard to get a ticket to. We're playing the Rails this afternoon ourselves, and actually, Sally Balfour, another Top End songwriter, she's releasing her Christmas single today as a part of our show. So I might get her to send that your way to see if you like another Top End. And it's also kind of like an anti-Christmas song as well. So not that we're,
anti-Christmas. Not at all. No, I was just thinking about Christmas the other day, and I really remember Christmas as a kid because toys and it was nice. But even later, you know, with the family and stuff, and it's a really nice time. But times change. I mean, the older you get, families move away or you don't have family. So it's... And there's that Christmas, which is ongoing and special for all sorts of people. And then there's the Christmas, the corporate Christmas, which is, you know, where big stores are trying to sell things and all that sort of stuff, which is fair enough. You don't have, you know, you just observe that. You can be part of it if you want. And if you don't want to be part of that, fine. But, you know, you just... As you get older, you think of your mum and your dad and the nice times you had when you're having Christmas and your mum's cooking, and that was the best part of life, you know, just the best parts of life. So there's a nice part of Christmas. It's been, you know, like everything, as Brownie will say in his little letter, which I'm going to play a little later, everything's been corporatized, and people are saying that to me all the time, and it's probably a shame, but yeah, when we get a song called Merry Christmas to the Losers, we realize there's hope in the world, Dave.
And there's a place for us all, but yeah, no. And today's show, there's going to be a lot of tears as well, because you mentioned Ted before, because obviously Ted was a big part of so many of our lives here in the Territory. Mm. So we're actually going to pay homage to Ted in doing a rendition of The Little Drummer Boy, but instead of having the snare drum going with the marching sound.
Beer carton.
It's going to be an orchestra of Foster phones. So, yeah, there's not going to be a dry eye in the house.
Well, I hope you don't drink them before you're playing, because that'll be carnage.
That's it. We'll keep it for after. We'll get very merry afterwards, I'm sure.
Well, Dave, I'm just about to release this on Australia and the world, and it's called Merry Christmas to the Losers, and thanks very much for writing it. Good luck, mate. I'll talk to you again.
Cheers, Macca.
Thanks, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. Captain Matt here from the Almadope Pal in the Heritage Fleet in Melbourne Docklands. How are you?
Captain Matt, I'm good. What's happening?
Yeah, look, we've got a bit of a day of action planned for today on the Docklands with a few heritage vessels. So that's the tall ship Almadope Pal, the tall ship Enterprise, and the steam tug Wattle. We've got a bit of a crisis on our hands, so we're getting evicted from the Docklands as the, construction goes on for more and more apartment towers. There seems to be not much space for heritage vessels and for the maritime fleet that's called that particular port home for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're encouraging people to come down to the Docklands about 12 o'clock in Melbourne. We're going to have a bit of a show of support, a bit of a peaceful protest, just to show that people care for these vessels. And there's a whole lot of, beyond just museum pieces, they've touched a lot of lives, whether that's through, you know, taking young people to sea or getting community down there. So, anyone in Melbourne, we encourage them to come down 12 o'clock in the Docklands.
Well, good on you. That's all I can say. Again, my mantra is that we rush to do everything, and they've got to find, you know, it's the whole thing of building things for more and more people, and the people who build things are obviously very happy because they're making money. And but there must be a place for everything, Captain Matt. I'm not sure how many people you'll get there, but I hope you get a lot, because I think it's part of Melbourne's history and part of all our history. I mean, we tend to throw it out in lots of ways.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Captain Matt, what are you? Why are you? Do they call you Captain Matt?
Look, I'm one of the voluntary captains of the Almodo Powell. I work in commercial maritime myself. Work on a number of commercial ships and tall ships, and this problem's the same in Sydney as well. You know, this heritage fleet up there. I do a bit with the James Craig on Sydney Harbour, but you know, the same problem of development of our waterfront facilities is happening in Sydney and in Melbourne. So we're seeing the same thing around our cities is as they grow and as people want waterfront apartments, there's less and less infrastructure and opportunities for the ships that have called these wharves and these berths homes for hundreds of years.
Yeah, there have always been working harbours, but they just seem to be, I don't know, it's like the Manly Ferry. I mean, look what's happened there. They built a ferry and it wouldn't get under the bridge and it wouldn't work and the dock was too small. And but, look, I don't know what you do, Matty, but where's this? What time is this on, this gathering?
Yeah, so the ships themselves and a few of the, you know, charter boats and anyone else with a boat is welcome to join our regatta at 11 o'clock today in the Docklands. Mm. And then we're going to berth at in front of Etihad Stadium, well, sorry, Marvel Stadium, where the cow in the tree is at midday for a bit of a gathering and some words. So I think it's going to be a bit of a sight to behold all the heritage ships out there as well as the charter boats and yachts and pleasure craft. So get on down and take a look if you're in Melbourne and show your support.
All right. I wish I was down there this morning. What's it like in Melbourne this morning, mate?
Beautiful sunny day. We've had, you know, we've had a bit of a long trot of, you know, cold and windy and wet weather, but we've got it happening for us today, so it'll be a perfect day to be out on the water today.
All right. Good on you, Matt. Good luck.
Thanks, Macca.
Thanks for your call. Bye. And as I was saying, Brownie's letter, which I'll read now, is really all about that. Have a listen. I think I've been corresponding with Brownie since about 1986, but we get a letter once a year, I think. He says, it's been a while, Ian, and throughout the year again I've been traipsing through the wilds of the Kimberley landscapes, and it's been a fabulous year. And when the opportunity has allowed, I've tuned in on Sunday morning. My main objective, though, has been to highlight the wondrous aspects of the Kimberley region to my guests. Driving safari tours is no holiday for the crew who run these trips. We have to think about a dozen things at a time while negotiating bends, potholes, washouts, corrugations, and a thousand other daily hazards that the long miles throw at us. But for those of us who love this vocation, we wouldn't think of doing anything else with our time. The distant ranges and the disappearing tracks, the heat shimmers, the dancing mirages lure us into the timelessness which is exemplified in the simple word dreaming. I've written previously to you about the shaded, serene pools of the Mitchell Plateau region with its dense canopy of palm trees and ringing spirituality. I've even espoused the benefits of the quiet and secluded monasteries of northern Thailand and that relationship of natural beauty to the wellness of the human mind. I was recently taken back to my years in the wide spaces of central Australia and the pilgrimage I undertook prospecting the Tanami Desert. For the last 6 weeks or more, says Brownie, I've been sorting through my 40 years of life. My bush camp, once encircled by the swaying palms of Nawadu, is it Nawadu? That's the Mitchell Plateau, has for the last 10 years been located about 10 k's outside Kununurra in the East Kimberley. That's back when I once became a wanderer. But I only postponed the inevitable. I moved a sea container of my worldly goods from the plateau down to my mate's block on the Weber Plain Road outside Kununurra. It was subsequently embellished by a dear old mate now gone with a built-in veranda all round which became my part-time home base. Hidden well away within the inner sanctum of the container were boxes upon boxes of stored books, papers, writings and memorabilia dating back to the early 90s and beyond. I set myself the task of sorting all this stuff out in 6 weeks before flying back to my other home base in Thailand. I badly underestimated the sheer enormity of the task and almost didn't complete it. But that's just the background. Whilst going through one particular box from way back, I came across a letter which I'd received from you back in 1986 when I was prospecting the Tanami. It was the first time I'd written to you, but I'd been listening since 1983 when I first heard Keith Garvey on your show with this very old Australian shearer's outlook on the world, which leads me to the reason for this saga. I heard you make a hasty escape from questions about your longevity on the air and indeed your age. Well, I'm now 73 and I'm guessing that after 42 years of listening in, you're somewhere up there too, but at the least well into the 60s. So the point is, I reckon Macca on the Line is a brilliant song. And as an ex-musician come songwriter during the 70s, its lyrics, melody and vocals were so well put together, I think you should embrace the present, that is AI, not reject it. None of us knows whence comes the muse. This sounded to me like it came directly from the muse. So if the muse or an essence of the muse is found in AI, then I think we should acknowledge and celebrate its emergence. So with any luck, I'll be able to tune in next weekend from Northern Thailand and hear the sound of the muse loud and clear. By the way, I've barely finished packing, sorting and burning and gifting in order to jump on a plane to Perth from Kununurra, followed not long after by a flight from Perth to Singapore and then from Singapore to Chiang Mai, all within 30 hours. Amazing. Captain Cook would never have dreamed. The world is changing at breakneck speed, Ian, and we either go with the flow or get left behind. I, like most people my age, struggle with the state of the modern world as we're allowed to see it. If we can believe the filtered media which comes to us, we are currently in the most dangerous of times since the Cuban conflict of the 60s. A new world order is forging itself as we speak. But we only have to go to the supermarket or wander past a real estate agent's window to be made fully aware that the world we're handing to our children and their children's children is a travesty compared to the world we inherited such a short time ago in the 50s, 60s and 70s. But our power is limited, and even when we exercise our power at the ballot box, things just seem to get worse. It should be obvious to the dullest of minds that true democracy simply doesn't exist. It's a thought, a word, now used to stupefy the masses. Corporatization of the world since the beginning of the 20th century has usurped not only governments worldwide, but our so-called power to do anything about it. The thing we can do something about is our own peace of mind and how we react to the world around us. Amidst the sham and drudgery, there is a place of serenity. Every human being has access to this place. It's not just hearsay or imagination. The passageway to this place is through meditation, stilling the mind. There are a thousand forms of meditation, and the practice is readily available to anyone who takes the time, says Brownie. Our mind is our responsibility. If we aspire to happiness, then it's up to all of us, individually, to find our own state of happiness or inner peace. There are a thousand levels of happiness, and the ones that really benefit us aren't necessarily caused by major events like winning the lottery or finding our soulmate. A true lasting state of well-being can only come from within, not from without. We really should be teaching this simple stuff to our kindergarten kids and upwards. The world would be a much better place if we had people with strong mindfulness and wisdom leading our nations, instead of egotistically eccentric individuals hell-bent on their own agendas. I've said enough, says Brownie. Happiness is here and now, not some fictional future party time. It takes work and dedication, but it's there. Meditation, and especially Buddhist meditation, is right there waiting. I'll be tuning in from Thailand to see if Macca on the Line gets a run. So from the land of a million rice fields, I wish you a peaceful Christmas and an enlightening new year. Ian Simpson's on the line. Good morning, Ian.
How you going, Ian?
See, you wouldn't have been any good at the banjo or the guitar or the other things you played if you'd have been stuck on your phone all the day, would you?
Absolutely. It's incredible because I had all this time and I thought, I'm so glad that I didn't have a phone because, yeah, I just sat in my room and played for hours on end, and that wouldn't happen had I had a phone probably.
Ian Simpson's a great friend of mine from many years ago. Ian lives in Perth where he is this morning, and you wanted to tell me what, Ian?
Oh, look, sad to hear about the passing of many musicians last week actually, but Alex Hood especially, and
Ted?
He was a, yeah, Ted Egan, of course, because I had a big connection with him.
I know. I was playing some albums of his today, and I looked on the credits, and you're there doing all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and you may not know, there was an album, I think, called My Australia with Ted Egan, which is all the Flying Emus backing him up, and he hired a studio, quite a memorable event, where he hired a studio down in Melbourne. We all were down there, and we did the studio, and he kept plying us with beer, nothing against Ted and beer, but he did like a beer back then.
Yeah, but it was only a means to an end. He was just going to use the carton to play the...
That's right. As the sessions went on, the sessions got a bit looser. I think I only had maybe one, but everyone else was, a few of the others getting stuck into it, including Ted. But it has a great feel, that album.
Okay, yeah. Tell me about you and Alex Hood for a start.
Oh, yeah, look, when I heard that he'd passed, it was like he was a bit of an inspiration for me and other banjo players that I've talked to, like... Before I even played, I remember my brother getting a gift on the Wallaby, I think it was, or the Wallaby track, album.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of him sitting in the bush on the cover. It's a beautiful cover with his banjo on his cross him. And even that inspired me. I thought, what's going on here? Banjo Australia, it all seemed to tie in. But the music, I just loved it. I loved the way he strummed the banjo I eventually met him at the Canberra Folk Festival the National Folk Festival in Canberra, and he knew who I was, so that was a real thrill. We had lunch together, and him and his wife, and it was a really lovely, I had to thank him for the inspiration for me, because back then, banjo in the sort of mid-70s seemed to be everywhere. You know, it was on recordings, it was Deliverance had come out, and John Denver had quite a bit of banjo, and it just sort of, it's ticking all my boxes, and Alex Hood was in amongst it all. So I had to just mention that.
Inspired you. Yeah, everyone needs inspiration, don't they? Someone they look to and say, oh, gee, I'd like to do what they do, and thereby hangs a tale. And of course, you work with Ted many times.
Yeah, look, what a character. One of the funniest things, the emus sometimes did mutual gigs together at festivals and things, and one of them, the emus did our spot, and then Ted Egan was coming out. But we all came out and joined him, and we'd all got hold of his little beer cartons. That's because Ted Egan used to tap on a beer carton and sing. That's what he did. And so we all managed to find about 6 beer cartons. We all came out and joined him, thumping on our beer cartons. That was just a funny moment. I think you had to be there for that one. But.
Ian, how long since you've been back to the East?
Oh, look, yes, yeah, look. I tend not to fly anywhere these days, and it has been at least 10 or 12 years since I've been jumped on a plane.
You don't fly anymore because it's so expensive, or the food's no good, or what's the story?
I can put up with the lack of food, but it's just a pain. When you've got instruments and things, it really is a pain to get through, and it seemed to be getting worse and worse, and now you almost have to give it like a DNA sample to even get through the gate, and it's just a pain to do all of that, and I'm just so content being home.
It's no good being content. That's a terrible place to be. I'm glad I'm not in that space. But anyway, because I was going to say, we're doing a concert in a couple of weeks, and some of your friends from the Gumboot Band will be there, Paul Panicki, et cetera. I know we toured before, and they'd love to see you, Simo, because every time they see you, they start giggling.
I won't tell them why.
I said I won't say any more. But Ian, okay. If you come over, we miss you over here in the East.
Oh, I know. I feel a bit bad that I will get over there one of these days.
Well, it's not on for 10 days. You can drive. Get in the car now. You'll be here in plenty of time.
Yeah, and leave tomorrow.
Yeah, and you can tell all your talk to your friends on the way over. You can stop at the head of the bite, and you can stop in Mildura or wherever.
Sounds good.
Anyway, have a think about it, Ian. Don't say no. But two greats of Australian music, Alex Hood and Ted Egan, passed, but their legacy still lives on. I've got quite a few Alex Hood albums, as well as Ted's, of course. But
did you know Alex Hood?
No, I spoke to him once or twice in the program. I think, but look, that was a long time ago. Because I mean, he was he was not famous, in inverted commas, was he? And so he was a real, again, a real troubadour, somebody going around playing in little places. He'd set up his shingle somewhere in a little hall or whatever, or play in a pub or whatever, a bit like almost busking, if you know what I mean, and spreading his music, those Australian folk songs from way back, you know, the Ryback Shearer and all that sort of stuff. That was part of his. And I played a song of his this morning called Sydney or the Bush, I think it was called, yeah, which is a great Australian saying, yeah.
Yeah, but he did sort of make it in the schools. There was, he was involved with all the school music, primary schools and stuff, which is great. I mean, you know, once again, spreading our folk music and banjo. He's always strumming away on his banjo. And you heard about Steve Cropper too, the famous American guitarist.
Oh, yeah. No, is he gone?
Yeah, he went too. And Ian Leese, a great Australian bass player from, like, he did a lot with Lee Kernaghan.
That's right, I heard that last week, yeah.
Yeah, he went. And Nigel Lever, a great bluegrass musician from Sydney. I've known him since I started, you know, I started. And another one who went. So all these amazing musicians.
Well, you better get over here quickly, Ian, before anything else happens. All right. Don't laugh. Hang up the phone now and go and think about it seriously. Think of all the things I've done for you, Ian Simpson. And you couldn't do this one little thing.
You have been good to me, Ian.
Better than I've been to myself. All right, good on you. See ya.
Bye.
See ya, bye. My guests this morning have been Dr. Ian Francis, who's an ophthalmologist, and Dr. Susan Gaydon, who's a consultant radiologist. Thanks for coming in, both of you. I hope you've enjoyed it. And the green room.
The green room's been great.
It's been a blast, Macca.
Thank you.
It's been a blast. Well, thank you. So what do you, how do you spend your Sundays? Is Sundays your day off? It is for many people still.
Yes, my brother from Mackay is staying with me, so I have to take him to the airport shortly.
Uh-huh.
And then quiet day. Watch the cricket.
Oh, that's
once
right.
It starts.
Oh, it's a bit of a disappointment, isn't it? Really,
yeah.
I like a good contest.
Yeah.
The Poms seem out of their depth.
Yeah, it's a bit one-sided in this series.
It's partly, I think, going to another country. I mean, it's always different here, and they're not used to playing. But you know, they're international travellers. They play everywhere. They should be able to lift their game. But maybe they're lulled into a false sense of security when they're playing in England and stuff. And beating in, they come here and, I don't know, they just don't seem up to it, which is a shame because I had a sneaking wish that they would beat the Australians because I think...
Absolutely, I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah. Mm. It's no good to keep winning, whatever you are. If you do it with dignity, but often I don't think winners do things with dignity.
Exactly.
Often. Yeah, so anyway, so it's been a three-day test and could be over in a couple of overs on this morning, couldn't it?
Yes.
So anyway, it's interesting, isn't it? I'm getting messages, a little mate of ours who was a lovely guitar player has passed away too, Parish Mahobrak, I believe, overnight. Here's the Gumboot Band again. Thanks for your company this morning. There's a lot of things I've meant to do, but I haven't had a chance. I'll tell you what I brought in this morning. My friend Liz Wessels in Perth when I was there a couple of months ago, she gave me this piece of soap, which is made of the offcuts of it's made of the offcuts of olive oil, making of olive oil. Feel it and touch it. Next week, the 14th, is our last program for the year. And as a bloke who left the ABC said once, when he retired, he said, "It's been real." He didn't say it's been unreal. He didn't say, it's been unreal. He said, it's been real, which I don't think is a compliment, actually, but anyway. I hope you enjoyed Brownie's letter. We certainly enjoyed Ian and Susan. Thank you for coming in. Thank you. I'd like to thank my producer, Lee Kelly. He's a little champion. And Pete Clemson, who's twiddling the... He's a panel beater. Whatever you do in here, he beats you on the panel. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.